Really, I think I'm hoping you're hearing is we have so much to offer, but we're our own worst enemies sometimes. We get in the way at times of what God wants to do, but yet we don't even haven't even thought through exactly every aspect of our belief system and our life. So let me say this. When I had my four darkest years, I remember days slopped. I worked on a horse farm, and I remember days cleaning out stalls, and I'd stop sometimes in the middle of it. And what I realized is I had Jesus from a child, but I had a lot of baggage that went with that, okay? So I in my mind, it was the baby and the bathwater. So part of me wanted to throw out the baby and the bathwater, but I said, I can't do that because the baby is precious. How do I figure out what's the baby and what's the bathwater? And what I did is I cleaned out, mucked out stalls day after day, is I rethought and challenged everything I believe. And I threw a whole bunch out. But it forced me to rethink life at a level I never would have thought it through if I hadn't been in so much pain. And that, to me, is what we have to do if we're ever going to be people that can effectively reach others. We got to challenge every little thing that we hang on to and say, is this really of God, or is this just something that I've spiritualized and tried to make righteous? And that is a very difficult journey, and it's a painful journey at spots, but it's important. And so another way to say it is to be effective in what we're doing in reaching the people that are kind of in the most broken places requires us to do the deepest soul work possible. Because if we're not willing to do it, we'll never be effective. And so that is so important. Okay, I talked about all of that. Boy, we're just flying along here. Sanctification, we talked about as well, and the whole learning, child learning to walk, Romans 7, the things I want to do, I don't. What a lot of people don't realize is that Paul wrote that as a mature Christian. And what he is saying is there's still, even though there's the spirit in me, there's still a dark side to me. And so if we ever get beyond believing that we have a dark side, we're in trouble. And so we have a dark side. The whole thing of Christian life is not to feed it, but it's still going to come tempting us. It's still going to come knocking. And so we're no different than an addict. An addict has a dark side, but they also have a good side. And they want good. But the dark side's become so powerful, it's made the good side, they just can't follow it. But we also have a dark side. And Paul is humbly saying, I have a dark side as a mature leader of the church. And so we have to be able to say, we have issues, we have problems, and be humble about that, and that we will struggle till the day we die. Nobody ever gets it perfectly. And that gives hope to people. If we just act like we got our act together all the time, eventually they're not going to trust us because they say, we know you don't have your act together all the time. So you're lying somewhere. And now I don't trust you. And so what I have found is this. I've watched addicts, and you get a new bunch of addicts come in, and they all kind of show off and spar and try to impress each other and intimidate each other, and they share kind of sensational stories about how impressive they are. And you go as a counselor, okay, if we don't get past this, this is going to be a disaster. Then it takes one client to get real. One client to cry and start opening up. And what happens? It changes the whole group. Everybody starts to open up. And they go, oh, I'm not alone. You go through that too. Oh, I'm so glad you do. And they get hope. And it's when we share out of our struggle, not so much out of our victory, but out of our struggle, they get hope. And then when they see victory is possible, they get more hope. But they got to be in balance, the struggle and the victory. Okay. We just finished talking about this in properly defining godliness. A false standard of spirituality. Next thing I want to say about this. I think Christians, we don't realize that we rank sin as being more severe. Okay? So, God doesn't, but we do. And so Jesus in John 8, where they brought this adulterous woman to her, what did he say? He said, whoever's without sin, cast the first stone. What he is saying is, every sin is equal. So if you got no sin, then you can cast a stone. But if you got a sin, but maybe a different kind, you're just as guilty as her. And then James 2 does the exact same thing. So let me give it to you this way. When I was growing up, I remember only two kind of church discipline excommunications. Guess what they're about? One guy had an affair, and one guy had premarital sex and got a girl pregnant. So what does the church say? If you sin sexually, that's the bad sin. We're going to kick you out. Meanwhile, everybody went home and overate and gossiped a little bit and was negative and critical about that person over there. They committed just as many sins or more, but they minimized those. And so here's the thing. Everybody coming out of complex trauma, almost everybody, not everybody, everybody comes out of complex trauma has been promiscuous. So I learned that food was kind of my family's chosen way to sin as a little kid, but nobody made a big deal out of it. We celebrated that we could eat so much and that blah, blah, blah. And we kind of made it into a big deal that we were proud of. But really, we're stepping outside of God's design, okay? So when I'm struggling, I'm stressed, feeling overwhelmed, guess what I tend to want to do more? Eat. I sin, okay? If I want to use those biblical terms. People coming out of complex trauma, they use sex. So when they're stressed and feeling a bit overwhelmed, they go to sex. Now, who's worse, them or me going to food? We're both stressed and overwhelmed. We're both the same. We're stepping outside of God's design. We both need to come back into that. But what do churches do? We rank sins. And what James is saying is that should never be. Because as soon as you do that, you damage the people that you put the greatest rank to. And so it's important to you to understand that people coming with complex trauma, they go to things as their go-to when they're stressed that scare you and just fill you with horror. But you go to the different things, but it's just the same idea. And so we have to be able to acknowledge that. Typically, yeah.
And do
you
think that for self-protection reasons?
Yeah. Yeah.
You say there's no rank. I think Jesus ranked and very categorically. You mentioned John the Baptist and Jesus both being very holy people, right? Both of them addressed the Pharisees only in a really aggressive way.
Fact.
Vipers, hypocrites, whitewashed graves. For one reason, and that's for the hypocrisy. All sins were forgivable, but he was called by the sons of by Satan, he calls out, he casts out Satan.
Yeah.
The unforgivable sin, he calls out his own, you know, that hypocrisy, that was the biggest thing. And typically, it was the establishment, it was the religious establishment that was the most, the greatest target to Jesus' verbal abuse.
Exactly.
Because that was the one sin that Jesus had a really hard time with, is that there was a self-righteousness and blindness guys thinking, they're all right.
Yep.
They're better than the sinners. They made that, and that to me is a sin. That's
yes.
Because all the other sins, you know, forget it. It's going to be forgiven, and it's almost like, it's like childlike, you know. But that sin, that judgment, that self-righteous, that, oh, and you know, that's what that to me is my attention. That's what the Bible is used for, the law.
Right.
The Bible is used to build up the case.
Right. Again, well said. I would put it this way. I wouldn't say that Jesus ranks it as worse. He just speaks about it more. Because it was the hidden sin that nobody saw that did the most damage. And it was amongst the most spiritual people. And so he just called them on it and used, basically Jesus swore at them. He called them snakes, hypocrites. He used all kinds of dirty language to try and describe them because he was passionate about the damage people were doing in the name of God.
So he did that where?
Exactly.
Where?
Exactly. And it was to lead to repentance, not just to beat them down.
Yeah, that's because it's about God. It's so important. I want everybody to hear that.
You're saying it very well. I think they're getting the point. No.
No.
Well, so here's where I was going to go, okay? Hang on to it. Hang on to this. Now, this will probably get me in trouble. Here's what I want you to understand. If you carefully read Jesus' ministry and every sermon he preached, you realize he never once talked about abortion, but abortion was all over the place in that culture. He never once talks about homosexuality, and it was rampant in that culture. Now, I'm not going to get into it if it's right or wrong, because to me that's a huge topic that would take me an hour to really cover. But it's to realize why, if Jesus thought these were the baddies, why didn't he even mention them? Why did Jesus focus on self-righteousness? Why did he focus on just stepping outside of God's design, and he didn't pick what we've made into the baddies? And so again, I'm not going to resolve that question today for people, but it's one we really have to honestly look at. Yeah. And 75% of addicts smoke, and so you really have to just accept that, and that's all part of that. Okay, we're almost done. So I'll just do this, and then I think we'll call it. But the other danger that I see churches doing is presenting a magical fix. And I've kind of talked about this. And so a lot of it comes out of, you just need to be filled with the Spirit, and then your life will just be okay. That, addicts are looking for a magic solution. And so Christians, sometimes I call it the holy hop. You're going along like this and you holy hop and you're up here all of a sudden. And now you don't struggle with anger anymore, and you don't. And we present that if you just have this experience, all of a sudden your problems will melt away and life will be smooth. And they're drawn to that, because life for them is a lot of work. And we do false advertising. And what I've come to in my mind, and again, I don't want to say it categorically, but I think Christians often suffer from this inferior complex that we have to lie to sell our product. So I got to oversell it and promise more than it can deliver in order to get people to buy it. Because if I go and say, have a relationship with God and life's going to be really difficult and you're going to have a lot of pain, who's going to want to sign up? So we say, come to God and he'll fix your troubles. Oh, okay, I'll sign up. But that does so much damage, because here's what happens with an addict. They buy into that. They get baptized, they do go to church, and then they still got trouble. And life is super hard, because now their family doesn't like them anymore because they're into a new way of living. And then they become disillusioned. And they go, screw it all then. I got lied to, it, and they walk away from it. And so we have to be honest about what we're offering and not oversell it. One of the things to be very, I love it when clients have kind of that emotional experience with God, where they meet God and it just overwhelms their senses, and they have a high. And their emotions, they've never felt so good, they've never felt so clean, and so much love in their hearts. Here's the trick. Addicts become addicted to a high. And they will, instead of chasing God, chase the next experience. And they'll keep going from church to church seeking experiences and not chase God. And so we love to have, and God gives experiences. He gives powerful experiences. But we have to be careful how we talk about that, because then for an addict, they easily become addicted to the experience and not to the God behind the experience. And so we can do damage there as well.
Some of them.
They're subtle.
Tied to our love.
Yeah, exactly. So, a good point, because another way to say it is this. What I am trying to show you is there's healthy experiences, sensational experiences, but they can drift subtly into unhealthy. There is healthy sharing, but it can drift into gossip. So we have to work to find the authentic, healthy part and be able to help people distinguish between the healthy and the unhealthy. Because what some people, so many people from complex trauma, if they grew up in abuse, they just, the pendulum swings, so they say, never correct your children, let them do whatever they want. That's how you parent. You do the exact opposite. So then they think, well, if my life is full of pain, life with God is nothing but pleasure. It just swings. So they don't have a sense of what the normal, the healthy is. So if they hear, share, but don't gossip, they go, that sounds the same. What's the difference between honestly sharing and asking for prayer for a person, or is that gossiping? And they get all panicky and they don't know what to do. So we're trying to help them. And so all of that goes down to, again, it's not what you say, it's your motive behind it. It's the attitude. So it keeps going down to the attitude. Exactly. Very good. Yeah. And we need that because we're wrestling with understanding and defining stuff. So. Yeah, so that's definitely, I think there's enough interest to follow up on that and to see some good stuff continue to happen. And a lot of what I do is help people put words to concepts that they kind of have an idea of, but once they just need the words to clarify it. And that's that lateral violence, lateral kindness. It just gives you a kind of a peg to hang your hat on and get it makes sense out of it for you. So that's very important in kind of developing a framework of thinking. Okay. Good question. So if you look at the 50 characteristics, So complex trauma, people will have those as kind of their main ways of coping. But every person, even from a healthy home, will be tempted at times to do those things. So, and they might do them for a bit and then kind of catch themselves. The longer they stay in it, though, the more unhealthy they will become. And so they end up looking like a complex trauma person because of that. So those 50 characteristics aren't just for complex trauma people, because everybody faces them at times. When you get to the role model thing, what people is very important for people to realize is this. If you have an unhealthy role model, so they did those 50 things, but they said the right words, they played with you, they provided for you, but they didn't handle stress well, they didn't handle anger well, they weren't a good role model, that role model is complex trauma. It's the most subtle form. Yes. Yeah. So if you take a child, I had the most interesting thing. At my parents' 60th anniversary, they brought a picture that had my grandpa, my dad, my brother, and his son. So four generations of Fletchers, and they were all sitting on a couch. Their posture was identical. They all sat slouched, all four generations, and they slouched in the exact same manner. Now, I'm pretty sure my dad didn't sit my brother down and say, sit this way on a couch. He just sat that way, and as kids, we picked it up. He was a role model. He didn't have to verbally teach us or anything. So what I say to clients all the time, it's what your parents, their attitudes, not their actions, that you picked up. They might have done lots of nice things, but you picked up their bitter attitude. You picked up their anger. You picked up, and that's the part that shaped you the most. And that, they begin to see that, and they go, yeah, because I became like them in how I handled my anger. I became like them in my bitterness and all of that. So children have this amazing ability to pick up not what you do, but who you are. And that is what shapes them. And if that's not healthy, then they get the complex trauma. But very good question. Okay? Some people are starting to go to sleep. So let's end it there with, again, clients, people in recovery, are the world's best at beating themselves up. They need to learn to be gracious to themselves, but part of that is that we are gracious to them. And then they can begin to learn that. So thank you so very much. What I would love is for those of you who really think God is starting to do something as far as setting up a program here, either on the island or in Nanaimo area, whatever, that you would start talking about that and let me know. I'm going to be sitting down with Brent on Tuesday just to see where he's at as far as, do we pursue doing something more than just this weekend? Is there a need? Is there a place to actually start thinking about putting energy into developing a REACT program for this area of Canada? That's what I'd love to have people talk about. A couple things just so you're aware of what's happening. We were asked a year ago to go into the 5 reserves in northern Alberta and to teach people about complex trauma. We've been asked now to go into the reserves in northern Manitoba and to begin working with Indigenous people coming out of the residential school stuff, because it is such a huge need, and many of the chiefs and elders are saying, we cannot fix this on our own. We need somebody to help us figure it out. So that's been a wonderful opportunity that's opening up for us that we're really excited about. But what I have seen in the year and a half we've been doing REACT is, okay, this is working. Whatever God's kind of put me through and all that I have learned, we are watching on a daily basis things happening, and people's lives are changing, and they're not just staying clean and sober, but they're starting to get healthy. And it has been one of the most rewarding things. So part of what I've been doing over the last 10 years is been training people kind of like, not in a formal way, but in an informal way. And so now half the counselors at React have been trained by me and just by hanging around and watching me, etc. So we've been building, kind of like Jesus with the 12 disciples, and I tell them, it's getting close where I'm going to say, okay, go. And I'm going to kick you out and say, go reproduce. So we're in a place where we could move to start a second React, but we don't want to do it just without checking it out carefully and without really having full support and people behind it. So that's being totally transparent about where we are at or where I'm at. And so now I really would love if you guys would just say, we need to talk about where we're at and just see if this is what we believe is what we should be putting our energy into and our time and money and making it happen. Thank you very much.